Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Our guest is scheduled to be Marshall Masters. He has not called into the show yet. He probably forgot. It happens. It happens more than I would like. I probably should have reminded him. But I do have some news that I'll cover quickly. There is, allegedly, now a very strong theory that there is a ninth planet in our solar system. AOL News has a new article that is entitled, NASA Needs Your Help to Find a New Planet. NASA thinks that Planet 9 might be beyond Neptune. You know, they used to say Planet 9 was Pluto, and then they realized it was so small. And there were a whole bunch of Plutos in what's called our Kuiper Belt, which was like all of these mass, all this gigantic asteroid belt that's in. We kind of have two asteroid belts, you could think of it, in our solar system. One, I think that the what we generally call our asteroid belt is between Mars and Jupiter. And it was actually, the Meyer material says it was a destroyed planet called Planet Melona. Several hundred thousand years ago, I think it roughly was. And then beyond Neptune is this area called the Kuiper Belt. And what they're noticing is that the Kuiper Belt has some really strange behaviors that make them think that there's this other really large planet out there. Caltech researchers have found evidence suggesting there may be a Planet X deep in the solar system. This hypothetical Neptune-sized planet orbits our sun in this gigantic elongated orbit, which is tremendously huge. It takes 10 to 20,000 years for it to complete one of its orbits. They're calling it Planet 9. They're saying it has about 10 times the mass of the Earth. The two Caltech researchers, one is named Constantine Batwigen, and the other one is Mike Brown. And these guys talk about this massive planet, or maybe a brown dwarf star that is actually causing planets to swing out from the sun in this very unusual way. So NASA is actually asking people to help them search for this additional planet. No one's actually found it yet. They've just found the behavior in our solar system that suggests that this planet exists. This Constantine Batwigen and Mike Brown have come up with a model that suggests that there is this planet out there. And I wonder if some people would consider this as some kind of strange NASA psyop. You know, people say there's a Planet X that's real close that's causing all these problems. I'm a little skeptical about that in some ways. But this new Planet 9, it's an ice giant. It's 10 times more massive than Earth. It could bring about massive death on the Earth. It's probably very improbable. If it passed close enough to unleash a massive gravity on the Earth, it could cause earthquakes, tsunamis. Again, it's about a 10 to 20,000 year orbit. The other thing that I found that's very interesting is that I've heard that eventually the planet Phobos, the moon of Mars, will be destroyed. It'll crash into Mars. It'll lose its orbit, and this will cause rings around Mars. So our solar system will be very different someday. So anyway, I do not have a call in with Marshall Masters, so I might do a shortened show this evening, talk a little bit about the Billy Meier case. One thing I was looking at this afternoon was the 31st contact that Billy had. That's Billy's big trip in the mothership. It's a tremendously long contact. I copied it and put it in a Word document it's nearly 100 pages long. It's a very interesting contact that happened between Semyase and Billy. Oh, many. It was in the 70s. One of the interesting things about this contact is it starts out with a trip around our solar system. And Semyase takes Billy, I think, first to Venus, which I thought was very interesting because there were certain things about Venus that they couldn't discuss with us, but they kept emphasizing that there was no human life on Venus, but there were some very, I think Venus has the beginnings of life on it. The situation on Venus is the beginning for life. And there's something on Venus that Semyase said we weren't allowed to know yet, which I thought was extremely interesting. Billy joked with Semyase a little bit about, can they photograph the Venusians? But there's actually no Venusians on Venus, at least not yet. There's too much pressure. There's too much heat. So we don't have Venusians yet. They did a kind of a quick travel around Venus a number of times just so they could get a good look at it. They also came back to the Earth to see the Apollo-Soyuz hookup. There was a hookup between an Apollo capsule and a Russian capsule about this time. We're talking in the mid-1970s. I'll read you something here from the contact. It says, and this is Billy. It says here, Semyase busies herself with some instruments while spellbound by the photography view screen that was specifically built for me, Billy speaking here. I look out in the direction of the Soyuz capsule. Suddenly, a part of the capsule simply disappears, and terrified, I look at the two human beings who rest lying within the seats, which look like deck chairs or something similar. Involuntarily, I cry out to Semyase. Well, all that Billy's seeing here is a manifestation of the technology of the Pleiar, and they're actually able to look right into this capsule. And Billy has a tremendous sense of claustrophobia, seeing the Russian capsule because the two astronauts in there are so close. Semyase makes the comment that their technology is 3,500 years ahead of ours. And the reason she said that is because Billy talked about the Soyuz capsule as being a flying metal coffin. So anyway, let me read a little something here again. Billy says, despite my feeling of anxiety due to the coffin-like confinement in these space capsules, I must laugh now because I have just watched how one of the floating Americans bumped his head on something and then reached for it with his hand. This should be attributed to the inexperience in weightlessness. Unfortunately, I cannot ascertain whose man this is because I know none of the occupants in this capsule, neither by name nor from the photos. Now, if you look out at the Future of Mankind site, there are some pictures, and I put a link in the chat room, that show Contact Report 31 and some of the photographs associated with this. It's a very, very long contact. It's also extremely interesting. So, and if you scroll down just past the Apollo pictures, you'll see some photographs of the actual mother ship. Semyase and Billy flying her ship actually out to Jupiter. And there are two black and white photographs of the mothership. One shows the mothership orbiting around Jupiter and the great eye of Jupiter there at what 19.7 latitude, as Hoagland is always talking about. And then on the right side is the mothership, the top of the mothership with what's called the, I guess, the cupola. So anyway, this mothership is gigantic. And it's described this way: at a distance difficult for me to estimate, a huge metal sphere is hanging in the darkness of space, reflecting only weakly the light of the sun. Very slowly, now the speed of the beam ship decreases. Semyase is sitting very attentively before her instrument panel, steering knowingly and carefully in the direction of the huge sphere, which looks to me like a small planet. I can see, way down in the lower third, a little to the left, a big gap is opening, literally, which I soon recognize as an entrance. And I can see way down in the lower third, and a little to the left, a big gap is opening. This is the hatch. It's doubtlessly a hangar into which we are now flying. Innumerable beam ships of the same types as ours were standing there in orderly rows by rank and file, and only a 100 by 100 meter square of the hangar entrance is cleared. I look back at the hangar entrance and can see how a wall is moving from top to bottom to close the entrance. So Semyase and Billy are in her beam ship. They zoom out to Jupiter. They can see this gigantic mothership that looks like a small planet orbiting Jupiter. Billy sees the hatch open in it, open up on the mothership. Semyase flies her beam ship into the mothership. Billy then asks her, how large is this thing? Semyase explains that it has 141,000 inhabitants. And she goes on to give the diameter at some point, and I'm scanning the text here. I think it was something like 17,000 meters in diameter, 17,182 meters in diameter. And it was as tall, it was very high. Its height was as high as the largest mountain on Earth. Which, interestingly, according to Pleiaren, they don't count Mount Everest as our largest planet because our largest mountain, because they measure from the center of the Earth out to the top of the mountain. And they say Mount Chimborazo in the Andes is actually, if you do the measurement that way, is actually taller than Mount Everest. So in any case, we'll continue on. So Billy and Semyase land her ship in the Great Mothership, and then they're walking, and they get picked up by another craft that takes them up vertically in the mothership. And I'll read this section. It says, Semyase occupies herself with a small device in one hand, And I see that before us the transparent wall opens and reveals an entrance. Then completely silently comes a floating vehicle. Not bigger than the size of a Volkswagen. It floats 20 centimeters above the floor and is equipped with very comfortable seats on top. Semyase asked me to take one of the seats beside her. And the craft floats away and it rises higher and higher in the mothership. And then suddenly it stops and docks into a side compartment. And in this side section of the mothership is like this giant Garden of Eden. And there's an open space approximately 2,000 by 100 meters. And Billy says, I feel myself completely transported into a magical world. Wherever I look, I see green fields, trees, shrubs, and flowers. A real little Garden of Eden in a spacecraft. Amazing. A fantastic thing indeed. I'm scanning down the text here in the contact report. And Semyase tells Billy they're going to meet the commander of the ship. And while Billy doesn't realize the commander of the ship is Semyase's, I believe Semyase's father, named Ptah. And Billy makes a few comments about that he's not going to grovel before the commander of the ship just because he's the commander of the ship. And finally, Semyase introduces her father, who is a single bearded man. Let me read this. This talks about the command center and talks about Ptah. It says, and once again we float on the vehicle towards the middle of the huge command center. And I can already recognize a horseshoe-shaped structure about 1,000 meters high, completely covered with apparatuses and image screens, and its center is overall not bigger than an average room. A single bearded man stands inside this horseshoe. This is Ptah. And he's looking towards them. And Semyase brings the vehicle that Billy are in into about close to about 60 meters from the horseshoe. And eventually she lands this little ship and goes over and gives her father a hug. And they speak in a language that Billy doesn't recognize. So Semyase introduces Billy to Ptah, and they do a little chatting back and forth. Nothing really major in any way. Ptah describes some of the controls on the ship and some of the technologies associated with the ship. And Semyase explains to Billy that some of the technology that they got for the ship came from Askit's people. Now, Askit is one of Billy's earlier contacts from the Tao universe. There's a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe, which was created 46 trillion years ago, and about the same Big Bang time as ours. And the Timmers developed the technology to go into this other universe, and now their people populate the Tao universe. Although they are from our universe, and they are from the Milky Way galaxy, and they all are also descended from a people called the Lyrians. The Plearans and the Timmers are descended from a race of Titans, you could say, some incredible people that lived in ancient times called the Lyrians, who really populated most of our galaxy. Let me continue here in the contact. It says, only when Askit stepped into official contact with us and through the Tao race, we acquired the knowledge and the ability to make time travel equipment. did we first manage to undertake this kind of trip? This was only 4 years ago by Earth chronology. So they built this great mothership 4 years prior to Billy coming on it. This is the situation of the matter around your knowledge, which is extraordinarily great and in relation, finds no equal in the world. You must become aware of this and therefore raise your understanding. Ptah is talking to Billy right now. You should thereby not emphasize yourself particularly because of your knowledge, and you should absolutely not want to put yourself above others. That must be out of the question. It's very good that you exhibit such a modesty and put it to use, but you must not be too modest, to which you are unfortunately inclined. Let it be clear to you that you have an extraordinary vast knowledge concerning the spiritual teaching and the creational laws and recommendation, and this resulting wisdom. And if you recognize this, then no one can or should any longer accuse you of megalomania. So Ptah is recognizing Billy's tremendous spiritual knowledge. This is Contact 31, and they're about to do what's called a hyperleap. That's where they jump from one star system to the other with almost no time passing. And let's see what Billy has to say here. He says, yeah, that's right. We were talking about time travel and related things and about this great space or two. I would now like to ask you whether I might be right about the following assumptions. Sannyasi has given me an explanation about the utilization of hyperspace, as you have already mentioned. Now, hyperspace relates to how they travel. They make these hyperleaps across the universe. Let me continue. As I now conceive the matter, the utilization of hyperspace, this phenomenon that I experienced earlier, it's almost like a time travel, they explain, offering all possibilities of past, present, and future, as well as other dimensions and spaces. Sannyasi had explained then that a hyperleap through endless distances only takes a split second to happen. But unfortunately, I only noticed that correctly just now. Billy notices every time they take a hyperleap, a jump from star to star, he feels this remarkable sense of peace and this deep, profound sense of peace and relaxation. Sannyasi explains to Billy that you're about 500 light years from your home world now. And they're about to take another hyperleap. I'm scanning right now to. Yeah, okay. Ptah explains our next destination is a destroyed sun. Its destruction took place about 10,000 years ago, when it was turned into a supernova. Today, it's recognizable as a very large nebula, as you call them. The distance from your Earth to this nebula is 3,150 light years by your measure. So, Billy actually took a picture of the Horsehead Nebula, and it appears in the contact report. I just put the link for this contract report in the chat room, and down at verse or line 123, you can see the Horsehead Nebula. So anyway, this is a phenomenal contact where Billy is taken across our galaxy. They go to another place called the Ring Nebula. A few minutes later, they take this another jump. Let me read this. This is Ptah. Ptah says, then so it shall be. But first we went ahead for a special destination. When you finish taking your pictures, we will jump to what they call J-H-W-H Mata, which you could translate as the Eye of God. J-H-W-H is the sign for King of Wisdom, and Mata is Eye. So in ancient times, there was a man, a King of Wisdom, who was not so advanced in the spiritual realms, but very advanced technically, and he destroyed a star. That destruction still appears today as the Ring Nebula. I'll continue here. It says, my work doesn't take long. Then we set up a new hyperleap where everything takes place the way I'm used to. This time I look at the stars again. And now I suddenly notice a gigantic image surrounded by countless sizes of all stars. Something like a colossal eye stares at me through the blackness of space. It must be very far away, but it's very easy to see. A gigantic eye that stares through space. This can only be the J-H-W-H Mata, the Eye of God. Semyase says, it's unmistakable, isn't it? Billy states, yes, and it's gigantic. Semyase says, I have already explained to you the origin and the cause of its structure. Billy says, I know, it's all written down. Patas says, it is for us a symbol of evil lust for power and domination, a symbol of hate, destruction, and human madness. That in contrast to the other natural formations, this is a work of man. Billy says, I know, Semyase has explained it all to me. Here in this constellation was also the original of the first, the original home of the first human races. Okay, and I had alluded to this earlier. The Ring Nebula, the Eye of God, is located in an area called Lyra Vega. And according to the Meyer information, the first human beings in the Milky Way galaxy came to Lyra Vega, and they came from another galaxy. But about 20 million years, 30 million years ago, something to that effect, they came to Lyra Vega, and they developed a large civilization. They spanned multiple solar systems. They really populated the whole Milky Way galaxy, but they were warlike. The Lyrians were warlike. They destroyed worlds. Worlds that would not comply were either destroyed or forcibly conquered. So they had their own problems. They went through their own warlike times, and they even destroyed themselves and took their own people back, destroyed their own civilizations for a few times and had to rebuild their own civilization. They came to the Earth just kind of in an exploratory phase some 20 million years ago. They came back about 389,000 years ago, and they had a small colony on the Earth for a while. Well, they violated certain of their own rules, certain of their own laws, and they mixed with the Earth peoples, and they abused the Earth peoples. And other groups from Lyra Vega came here and saw the crimes that they committed, and they basically took away the technology of these people from Lyra Vega and left them stranded here on the Earth as part of their punishment. But they also signed a kind of agreement, meaning that they would die here on the Earth and then they would become part of the reincarnational patterns of Earth. In other words, their spirits would reincarnate in a society much less advanced than their own. Because the people of the Earth at this time, 389,000 years ago, were extremely primitive. And we're at the very beginning of our evolutionary stages. So we have on Earth a very interesting situation now. There are some people, I would say millions, who have spirit forms which may be between 8 to 12 million years old. And this is because they died during this time when the Lyrians were here 389,000 years ago, or they died during the first Atlantis and Lemuria, which was hundreds and thousands of years ago, or they died about 130,000 years ago. There was another civilization headed up by a man named Pelagon. So there have been these ancient civilizations on Earth which were extraterrestrial humans. The Great Pyramid, as we talked about before on this show, is about 73,000 years old. And its construction was led by a people from Orion. These Orion people were also descendants of people from Lyra Vega. So what we have are these megalithic and monolithic structures on Earth that are leftovers from civilizations that were really extraterrestrial in nature. So we have a naturally developing Earth human and extraterrestrial humans living side by side. So the Earth's history is extremely convoluted, and that's why we're still trying to figure it all out. It's a good thing we have these contacts that help explain certain bits and pieces of it. So Billy is meeting with these people that call themselves the Plearn. Two Plearn he's talking to with now. One's called Ptah, who is the leader of this mothership that Billy is now on. Semyase is one of Billy's mentors. Billy had his first mentor was a man named Svoth, who he met with when he was the first time about 5 years old, and Billy met with Svoth for 11 years. Svoth was the father of Ptah and the grandfather of Semyase. So these extraterrestrial humans that are meeting with Billy, a group of them are from the same family. And this has some bearing on Billy, because Billy is, his spirit form is extremely ancient. And Ptah knows this. So does Semyase. So did Svoth. And so did Asket, who I talked about a little bit here as well. They knew that Billy's incarnation here on the Earth, during this lifetime, he would write down a very ancient and universal teaching called the Teaching of the Spirit, which has been taught on the Earth before. And bits and pieces of it have manifested in our religions, but always in a distorted form. So one of Billy's main focuses now is to put in written form this very ancient and universal teaching called the Teaching of the Spirit. And what it describes is how the universe works. There are certain laws of the universe, certain creational natural laws, one of which is love. You know, you've heard this a million times before, right? Well, not romantic love. We're talking about effective love, which is a very sober kind of love. It's a love based on observation. It's love based on wisdom. It's a love based on responsibility. A love based on a profound respect. This is a very stable kind of love. Now, the Pleiaren talk about affective love, which is an artificial love, which is a romantic love, which is very prone to changing, which is the opposite of wisdom conditioned love, which is extremely stable. So when we say that love is one of the laws of the universe, we're talking about a wisdom conditioned love. There's a writing on love that goes something like this. Love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal expresses this love, fulfills its purpose in love. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal. The love that is the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So this superintelligence, which created all things, radiates love. And Billy is going to experience this in this hyperleap. While they're doing these jumps, the player and do this intentionally, they jump at a greater and greater distance. So they'll spend more and more time in what's called hyperspace. And Billy starts to experience this incredible peace, the incredible love of creation. And it's okay. I'll read something here which Sannyasi says to him. She says, this is not very complicated. The cabins where you can see there beside the screens are equipped with all necessary means to capture empfinden. Empfinden is a German term for feeling and thoughts. The collected impulses are automatically stored in a special computer and may later be reproduced by it according to convenience. The adjustable and fully adaptable helmet that you see there are fitted with very fine probes and also encompass a special sensor network in the form of a fine mesh, which intercepts all types of energies and converts them to impulses, which are then forwarded by the computer where they are registered. The captured energy from the thoughts, the feelings, the empfinden are grounded into very high values and can only be held by this equipment. The energies of the empfindens, feelings and thoughts, exist in the form of transmission only in the realm of hyperfrequencies. To be able to register your thoughts, feelings and empfindens, it is just necessary that you sit yourself in the chair and lay your head under the helmet cap, which will then adapt itself automatically. So Billy is sitting in this chair and he puts kind of like this helmet on. And this great journey begins in about 23 seconds. Okay, this is what Billy has to say. Here it says, I promptly sit down in the extremely comfortable chair inside one of the three cabins. As soon as I am seated, a peculiar helmet moves over my head and settles down silently. It is so large that it encompasses my whole head, only leaving my face open, so that I can see out from it and watch everything. But the helmet does not touch my head, rather lying equally close all around, staying about a centimeter and a half from my skull. As I can feel when I place a forefinger between the helmet and my head. Now I am tense and expectant, for I wonder what is going to happen. Patan and Sannyasi manipulate the console, and now I can again see how fantastic this starry sky is, and it's changing. Billy can, they have a way to make metal transparent, so Billy can like look up at the roof of this great mothership and see all these stars. The initially calmly passing by constellations are again transformed into strokes, and after a few seconds begin to blur. And in the next moment, they are no more than a whitish, milky mass, a shimmering mass, like I have experienced in all my previous hyperleaps. But now suddenly this milky, whitish glow is gone, and there is complete darkness. What is this? Now everything is suddenly bathed in a golden color, and then everything is suddenly silvery. But oh man, this radiant light, this radiant brightness, everything is bathed in radiant light. Everything exists only as radiant light. It's stronger than all the suns of the universe put together. Man, oh man, this bright light, and it doesn't even hurt me in the eyes. Man, this is the eternity, the bright radiant light of eternity. Look, there exists nothing else but the eternal. How splendid, splendid, man. This is the splendor itself. Eternity and splendor are one and the same. Why do I separate them? Why do I put the eternal in terms of time? Time does not exist. And eternity is splendor. Man, what is this? This calm, this peace. What is it? How did I get here? Love, oh, this deep, all-embracing love. There is nothing but love. Splendid. Oh, yes, I am in eternity. Just how can I forget that? So Billy is just, he's going on and on and on. This goes on for pages like this. Billy is experiencing what I was talking about earlier, that creational natural law of love, the universal consciousness. And he is experiencing being in union with the universal consciousness. And the Meyer information talks about seven steps that all human societies go. And this is where our spirit forms eventually go. And so here they are experiencing eternity through this technology, through this hyperleap. I'll read a little bit more of this. This radiant light, this splendor, this love in everything. Oh, yes, I'm a human being. But how can I? Why do I forget that? I am just a guest in eternity. And these lovely voices that call by me, where did they come from? I see nothing but radiant, soothing light. Who is calling for me? I don't see anything. Man, I'm no more. I don't see myself. I am eternity in the eternity. Oh, how is this? I can't see with my eyes anymore. And yet I can see everything. I can't hear with my ears, yet I hear everything. Yes, love, how powerful is this? How vast, infinite, and splendid. Everything is love and splendor. Just why does a human being not want to understand that? How? Anyway, again, Billy goes on and on. This goes on for pages. I'll have to cover this in a little more detail. Anyway, I just wanted to pass this information on tonight. We didn't have a guest. I was hoping to cover Planet X, but it's always good to get back in the Meyer material. I really needed to do that anyway. Short show this evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great evening.